You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hail Cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Josh, just another one of your average, run-of-the-mill, nothing-to-see-here weeks in the Premier League. What are we even going to talk about? It's just sort of like status quo. You know, this team's going to walk the league. These teams are getting relegated. So it was basically, we have solved FPL at this
point. A bunch of 2-1 wins with a late goal at the end. Hard-fought matches, boring nil-nils.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to talk, obviously, about all of the insane score lines and performances from game week 4 and then look ahead to game week 5. But I think you saw this on Twitter. Michael Cox, who is kind of a famous football journalist for his book Zonal Marking.
Yeah.
He tried to start a fire on social media today where he tweeted, "I realize a lot of people play fantasy football and enjoy it, but it's increasingly creeping into actual football coverage, both literally and because you can tell people are basing their opinions on players around it, and it's making coverage much worse." Hmm. So this is, on the one hand, everyone's welcome to have their opinion. And I mean, commentary in professional sports is always hotly debated, and generally people hate it no matter what.
Right.
But so Michael Cox can think whatever he wants. But this is also the thought of just say you don't like fantasy football. If that's how you feel, just come out and just tweet, fantasy football sucks and I don't like it. Have some courage, Michael Cox.
Michael Cox doesn't like us. We like Michael Cox. It's a one-way street of love. That's fine. You know, that's fine.
Okay.
He's an insider, okay? He's the consummate insider, Brandon. We're mere outsiders talking about fantasy in our little corner, and he deigned to make fun of us for that or complain about it or whatever. Either way, it's lame. Yeah.
All right, let's do what we do best, Josh, and let's talk about fantasy football. And the great thing about game week 4, this is the first game week of the season, actually, that has come to completion. I should rephrase that, Josh. That has finished. By the time we record our typical Sunday night pod for your feeds every Monday morning. So what we're going to do on this episode, it's very straightforward. We're just taking stock of FPL through the first four game weeks ahead of this international break. So I'm very interested to talk about this, Josh, because I'm really having a terrible start to the season, like a lot of good managers out there.
Sure.
And I need help.
Yeah. I was talking about this before the podcast. I mean, the last couple pods that we've done, we've it's like game week two was like, man, this is insane. Like, what do we even do? This is like, we've never had score lines like this before. And then game week three was like, oh, this is insane. What do we do? Never had score lines like this before. And then, you know, today Liverpool have 7 goals scored on them. Like a fairly close to full strength Liverpool side. I mean, they were missing Sadio Mane. I guess they were missing Alisson as well. So they were down 2, but they still had many, many good players, including their full strength defense in theory.
Not to mention, it's probably less of a surprise that the shambolic defense at Manchester United let 6 goals pass. But I think I saw some stat that this is the first day in history in the top flight in which both Manchester United and Liverpool let this many goals by. So it's basically a history-making weekend, game week 4.
And I think, you know, it was useful that you brought up the Michael Cox bashes fantasy sports thing, because I think there is an actual argument to be made that that we should be able to just enjoy the insanity a little more than we are. Like, if you just take fantasy out of the equation and you just think about somebody who is not like a rabid fan of a particular club, which I think, you know, in most cases is not the case, right? I mean, you always have like your sort of hardcore element, but especially with the Premier League, there's people who just enjoy watching matches, or American fans who just, they just love having Saturday mornings, you know, come out and watch matches. And
or there's a huge population in England where the club that they've grown up supporting plays in the second division and the championship. Yeah. But the Premier League is the lead product. It's the one that has the most television broadcasts. It's right. The one that gets talked about the most.
So for that person who has absolutely no connection to fantasy sports, they are watching, you know, like Spurs go to Old Trafford and score 6 goals. They are watching Aston Villa destroy a team that almost broke the points record last season for most points scored in the Premier League season. Like, you are watching stuff that you have honestly probably never really seen before. You know, it's so extreme. It's so unusual. And, you know, especially the Aston Villa match. I mean, Aston Villa were a point away from relegation last season. Now they're scoring 7 goals in a 7-2 win. Like, 7 goals is a lot without a red card involved in any capacity. So,
How about this? This was a tweet from Adam Hurry, Football Cliches. Actually, he also randomly got a shout out, I think, last episode. But Boxing Day, 1963, in the top flight, Division 1 results: Blackpool 1, Chelsea 5, Burnley 6, Manchester United 1, Fulham 10, Ipswich 1. Leicester 2, Everton 0, Liverpool 6, Stoke 1. A draw, 3-3, between Nottingham Forest and Sheffield United. Sheffield Wednesday put 3 past Bolton, who scored none. A 4-4 draw between West Brom and Spurs. West Ham 2, Blackburn 8, and another 3-3 draw between Wolves and Aston Villa. You have to go all the way back to Boxing Day 1963 to find a more hectic day in the Premier in the top flight.
Yeah, and that, it's fun. I mean, like, this is like, you know, this is like the people who don't, like, when the Golden State Warriors when the Phoenix Suns, when Mike D'Antoni first took over the Phoenix Suns, and they were scoring like 130, 140 points a game. This is when Steve Nash was there, one of his MVPs. And there were people who were like, well, I can't enjoy them, like, scoring all these points, and every match is like, every game is super exciting because they don't play defense well enough, you know? And you're like, well, but like, just objectively, it's really fun to watch them play. Like, it's really exciting. And like, in the Villa Liverpool game today, there were some great goals scored. I mean, even Salah's his second consolation goal was quite good. And to watch Ollie Watkins, like, they really played well, and it was fun. It is fun. And, you know, and I watched the Spurs Man United game. I don't have any players in that match. No fantasy connection at all. Every goal that Kane and Son scored was bad for me. And even Bruno getting a pen early on was bad for me. But it was thrilling to watch something so unusual. You know, it was so odd. And, you know, and so I was really able to sort of take off my fantasy hat. And, you know, Mikey, we have the opening question here is just, is it possible to enjoy the insanity? And Mikey used to say, you know, how do you make fantasy fun again after this? And the answer, I feel like, came from a different producer, producer Matt. It's producers talking to each other, Brandon. This is very synergistic.
they are high powered individuals in their corner offices, these producers.
But Matt said, the key to MFFA, Make Fantasy Fun Again, is to remember that in real life is more important than FPL. And yeah, I think making fantasy fun again involves making fantasy less a part of your viewing experience. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And for me, what has become stark through these first four game weeks is this is our 10th season playing the fantasy game. And up to this point, I think I always held this belief that I was somewhat in control. If results in my fantasy team weren't going the right way, I could change and affect change in my fantasy team.
You're the decider.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this season has just underscored the fact that this is a game that is well beyond your control. And the fact that you ever thought that you could influence the outcome, now we're just letting you know that was never actually a possibility. That was all an illusion. So I found that that's helped me kind of get through these first 4 weeks. Is like, oh yeah, like this is completely out of my control to a degree. Yeah. Now you could fairly say, wow, Brandon, you've just made a complete mess of the season, and you're by most measures a terrible fantasy manager. Looking at this season, so fair enough. I accept that criticism.
Well, first of all, it's four games out of 38, right? And you know that you're not a terrible fantasy manager because you have several, many, many good seasons, right? So there's no need to extrapolate, you know, as far as, like, it's just, you know, but I don't think it's all, I mean, I think that, you know, it's, I think that this was a season where you did have to, like, take your chances a little bit. And, and I think, and it's blown up in a lot. I mean, just the poor Sun owners who have had him and dropped him and had him again. Uh-huh. And, it's got to be kind of misery inducing for him to do so well when what did Mourinho say like last Monday? It's like he's going to be out for a long, long time. Or, you know, it was something like that. It was like very now Mourinho is about as dramatic as I am on our Twitter feed. Right. Like I've never like nothing bad has ever happened to me that I can't turn into like a. You know, I turned to Hamlet, you know, anytime. Yeah, like
I was thinking bad, Shakespearean drama, so I'm glad we got there.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, he's a little bit like that. He's probably my personality wise. I'm probably closest to him of anybody. And I don't mean that as a compliment for myself. You know, but it's sort of he just didn't really know what was happening. And I think maybe if I can bring this back to fantasy for a second. The fact that this is happening every week now, that that we're seeing these kind of insane scores, means that you too, listener of this podcast, are going to have a chance to have somebody who gets 18 to 21 points. You know, and
if you ever wondered what that felt like, don't worry, you'll get that chance sometime this season.
It's not going to stop. Why would it stop? Like, why, like the defenses aren't going to get better. And like, all they've done the last several seasons is import more and more attacking talent into the league. Right. Yeah. I mean, Rodrigo comes on for Man City. Rodrigo, the starting forward for the Spanish national team, you know, comes on in the 70th minute and scores a goal to equalize for Leeds at home to Man City. I mean, there's a lot going on. And it's just like, it's fun. Like, it is super cool that the starting striker of the Spanish national team came on and scored an equalizer against Man City at home. Like, it's like, if that's not fun, then like, there probably is a little too much fantasy going on. Cause that match was super exciting. It really was entertaining. And I had Kevin De Bruyne blank for me the second game week in a row. But it was still, you know, it was still entertaining to watch that.
I think we need to talk much more about Manchester City later on in the pod. And I captained Kevin De Bruyne this week, and that went poorly for sure. Yeah. But just one last general piece of advice about having fun playing this game comes from FPL JMO. And he says, is making fantasy fun again simply forgetting how your game week is going along with any aspirations of a good OR and just enjoying watching the goals fly in? So it's just what we've been saying. Like, we live in a marvelous time. I mean, we live in a horrible time if you look out your window. But if you just look at your TV screen, wow, what a marvelous time it is. So I guess I'm just going to choose, like J-Mo here, to sit back and wonder at the amazing possibilities of Aston Villa getting a championship.
Yeah, exactly. Like our president caught COVID. Okay. I can't see my family. Like, I am home all the time. There are Premier League matches on like 8 hours a day, and goals are flying in all of them. Like, if you like that, you have to find a way to make that fun, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So maybe we just drop the, like, maybe just make fun again. I don't know the grammar's right there, but that's the new motto. Just make fun again. Create your own fun. All right. So let's take a quick break. We've got a lot of team. We're going to go through each of the teams very quickly and just do a stock up, stock down, or hold assessment for all 20 teams. I think we'll get into some really good fantasy stock. We have some questions from listeners that we've peppered into that discussion as well. So we're going to take a break. We'll get right back and talk about all 20 teams. Brandon, a quick shout out to our newest patrons this week. I'm gonna jump right in and read them off here, Brandon. New Volkswagen patrons, Todd Brower and Stephen Conway. New Lords of Love patrons, Neil Head, Ross Logan, Oscar Skoglund, Ryan O'Leary, James Kevin Whitman, Blake Atkinson, David Rose, Michael Cox, and no, not Michael Cox. He would never do that. He hates fantasy. Excuse me, Michael Cobb. God, he's in my head now. And Dananga Bandara, our newest patrons. Thank you to all of the new Patreon supporters. As a reminder, the Harvey Milk Mustache Cup kicks off in game week 5. You have a 2-week window because there's an international break, 2 weeks to become a Patreon supporter, pledge, and get into that cup. The winner gets a custom sweatshirt from the Always Cheating Shop. This is properly custom. We're going
to design. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Just like collaborating. We're going to have some brainstorming sessions about, like, okay, let's get outside of the box. What do you want this hoodie / coffee cup / t-shirt / I don't know what? Where are we going with this?
I think it should be a hoodie.
That's what I'd want.
So patreon.com/alwayscheating is where you can go. You also get an extra podcast each week. You get the Week in Review newsletter courtesy of Mini League Mate that gives you the rundown of what's happening in the Always Cheating Patreon League. Always Cheating Cup and Game Week 5. And then there are also t-shirts at various tiers and so on and so forth. patreon.com/alwayscheating.
And I just want to say, Fantasy Football Hub, this is a great one-stop shop for all your FPL needs. Pay them a visit at fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always. And go to that URL specifically, because when you go to our page as an Always Cheating listener, you get 15% off whichever tiered membership you choose at the Hub. Why would you do that? Well, because the Hub has a ton of great articles, podcasts, and videos coming from the minds of some of the greatest fantasy managers managing an FPL today. They're sharing their teams and their strategies across all these different mediums. It's just a great place to meld with the FPL brain trust. Yeah. Also, you access all of the Optistats, that hardcore data. And the Hub has these beautiful, clean, pristine-looking, useful tools that synthesize all of that data into something that's going to help you make decisions week to week for your team. So yeah, go check them out, fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always, and go to that page where you can get 15% off whichever tier you choose.
All right, Brandon, we're back. Taking stock after 4 weeks, we are, whatever that is, 1/9 of the way through the season. Is that right? 9, 18, 27, 36?
Don't ask me. Math has never been a strong suit for me, my friend.
Yeah, yeah, a little less than 1/9, I guess. But we're at the international break. 4 weeks in, the transfer deadline is Monday. So it'll be nice to have that done, because that has hung over a few things. Players like Hector Bellerin, it's like, is he going to hold a spot? Like, are they going to bring in, you know, it's like lots of just a little, you know, like what's going to happen with Mason Greenwood? Is he going to hold down that right spot? Now he may not, actually. I don't know if you've seen this Edison Cavani stuff, but that may.
I have. Yeah. The hilarious commentary today of like, wait, how much are you planning to spend on Edison Cavani when, you know, your defense is I don't know the let's save that talk for when we get to Manchester.
Sure,
United, because that is wholly related to that team.
It's like, is he Ibra or is he Falcao? You know, that's the question that I'm uh-huh. curious about.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to go through these teams very very quickly. Again, this is not a 3-hour pod, and we're going to hold off on the game week five preview until next week. So this is kind of this week's pod is taking stock at the first international break. So, and I'll name a team and then we'll decide if their stock is up, if their stock is down, or if we want to hold and reassess later. So, okay. Arsenal.
Yeah.
Arsenal is the first team.
Yeah, I think that Arsenal's stock is down, not because they're having a poor season, they've been getting results, but they're not scoring enough goals and enough FPL relevant goals for my taste. After game week one against Fulham, Willian looked like he was going to be could potentially be a James Rodriguez type character. Now we have James Rodriguez, and Willian hasn't really done anything since game week one. Aubameyang has gone quiet. So Arsenal are just doing their IRL thing. Fantasy-wise, they have become absolutely irrelevant, in my opinion.
Yeah, kind of agree, to be honest. I had a moment there. I was like, well, maybe Rob Holding could be that player. But, you know, Rob Holding didn't get a minute today at home to Sheffield United. And so Bayern at 5 million might be the one player that I have in my mind. You know, Saka did score today. He's down to 5.3 million. But okay.
Do we want to talk about the player that I had game week one? It's just like the crucible of my season of all these players that come through your teams and then to see them light it up. In game week four, a little heartbreaking. It stings a little bit.
Yeah. And I think, you know, he's only started two matches, actually only played in two matches so far this season. He played well in both of them, interestingly. But maybe, I don't know if it's because he's younger or whatever, but he's basically only getting minutes in home matches right now. And then they play away to Man City, away to Man United in the next two. So yeah, I think you're right. Stock down / hold. I'm going to make it like kind of a hold because I think that this team will have its moments. I just think it's a little too unsettled right now. It's kind of like what you're saying. Just little uncertain
okay, fair enough. Next team is Aston Villa. We've got a question here from Bradley Rettler just to kick things off. Are Villa lucky or are they for real? So a total ass kicking of Liverpool 7-2. Ross Barkley, the man, the myth, the legend, straight into the squad. Him and Jack Grealish, they're just like reliving World Cup 1966. It's just like it's Union Jacks for days.
Yeah.
What's not to love about this team? And the reason why I actually picked Kevin De Bruyne as my captain, even after all the wonderful statistical analysis of what Salah going to do without Mane on the pitch, was I was just like, well, I feel like Villa are good enough to keep this game close with Liverpool. And I find it very hard to predict City versus Leeds. So with KDB, point being is I'm very much rating Aston Villa right now. Do I rate them fantasy-wise? I don't think you're going to expect those levels of, obviously not, but consistent returns from Grealish and Barkley and McGinn and Ollie, what's his name?
Yep.
Ollie Watkins. I just don't expect to see it. So I think it's a stock slightly up, but I'm probably not going to be buying that stock at the moment.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, Watkins, 2.2% ownership, 5.9 million price tag. He's kind of tempting. You know, he's definitely worth thinking about. I mean, it's, you know, this could be like almost like a kind of cheaper version of what's happening in Everton right now, where you've got a remade midfielder and a young striker with some confidence.
Yeah.
And I mean, he scored a boatload of goals last season in the championship. It's weird. I mean, it's like, how do you assess a player who just scored a hat trick against Liverpool? Like that's such a, he could have had more. He should have had four actually, and hit the crossbar near the end of that match. So I think,
look at these fixtures for Villa. Leicester, Leeds, Southampton, Arsenal, Brighton, West Ham, Newcastle. Villa could, you would pick them to score at least a goal in every single one of those next seven matches. So maybe you could talk me into an Ollie Watkins.
Yeah. I mean, I just think the whole team in general seems like they're for real though. It seems like
the defense. You know, yeah. Right.
Defense is really, Mings looks great. I thought, you know, Martinez had a pretty good game as well. Had like one minor mistake, but you know, when you're playing Liverpool, there's a lot of pressure on you. I thought he handled himself fine. I think he ended up with like six saves or something like that. He did have six saves. And yeah, so I mean, I think that, you know, cash looks pretty good. I just think this team is legit. And from a fantasy perspective, you know, I think Grealish is the one player I'm like, God, am I really going to consider Grealish? I mean, I just had this like a whole summer last summer where I held him for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and like nothing was happening. And so I have to kind of shake that off a little bit. But he looked incredible today. I mean, he looked like the real deal, and he's finally surrounded with players who can create, you know, who can capitalize on the chances that he's creating. So, you know, with like Keegan Barkley linked up really well, as you were saying, and Watkins too. So yeah, so that is like as strong an endorsement of Vestaville as we've ever had on this podcast. Let's yeah, move on, right. Stock up before I change my mind. Brighton is the third team, Brandon. Is their stock up, down, or holding?
It pains me to say it, but because I kind of just... Oh, you and I, I think ever since we actually paid a visit to the Amex to see them take on West Ham, kind of have a soft spot for Brighton. And when the season began, you think, all right, Graham Potter's got one season under his belt. Things are starting to actually take shape. They're looking a little stronger. However, the last couple of weeks, I'm starting to think, well, it's just the same Brighton team, and I don't want to be fooled into expecting more than I ought to for Brighton. So from my perspective, while I think there are still players on the Brighton team to rate, on the whole, I feel like their stock is on the decline.
Yeah, I mean, Lamptey is interesting because he keeps putting in this huge performance. He's got three assists already on the season. But then he also keeps leaving with injuries. Yes. It's happened twice already this season.
Yeah.
Slightly dodgy hamstring. We'll talk about it more in next week's podcast. I have to admit, Brandon, I am on my wild card right now.
Booyah.
Yeah, and I'm actually having a pretty good start to the season, but it was really Spurs that convinced me to do it now. And I'm not a team value fanatic, but basically like half the players on my team were about to drop in price and half the players I want are about to rise. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to capitalize on this early. I don't think the advantage for holding later on in the season was strong enough. The only way this could really screw me is if some of those double game weeks that were coming later come earlier than we expect. But it doesn't seem likely to me. And for anybody who's on the fence about it, by the way, so basically, you know, because Man United and Man City didn't play along with Aston Villa and Burnley in those first that first game week, they will have a second, you know, they will have to make up that week at some point. And most of the assumptions that that's going to happen and around like game week, it's like 18, right? 18 or 19. I think that's when people typically expect it to happen. So, you know, I know we're in the Brighton section here, but, you know, just to, a very quick wildcard tangent. My feeling is basically that I'm not super precious with my wildcard. And I think, I think that if there's a chance to capitalize on some early performers. And for me, I'm just kind of finally convinced on Spurs. And I feel like they're worth bringing in and just holding, because it does seem like there's like, I don't know. It's like Mourinho second season syndrome is like, you know, the good version of it is happening, but it's like localized to their attack. Like it's not happening with their defense. But it really does seem like it's working. And even that Newcastle match where nothing happened, it was really only Everton who now seem like maybe they're like the best team in the league. Like, I don't know what's going on there. It was only, you know, they look great in the other three. And so that kind of got me to capitalize. But anyway, Lamptey is a player that I'm considering, but I'm just a little worried about all the.
What about Mape? Any Mape thoughts on your wild card? I mean, that if I were to say a star performer fantasy wise who is least likely to keep it up, it's probably Neil Mape. This seems like remarkably beyond. He is achieving beyond his capabilities, as far as I'm concerned.
There are so many fun players for that like 6 million ish spot. I actually think I have the least fun one in Mitrovic. I think that Callum Wilson looked fantastic. Mape could be valuable at times. Ollie Watkins, right? I mean, he looked fantastic too. So I think there are a lot of options in that price range. Obviously there you have DCL, who's slightly more expensive. Patrick Bamford, we didn't even talk about him. He's only 5.8 million. He looked really good, I thought, in the Liverpool match too. I was actually kind of unlucky to come up with nothing from that match.
All right, Josh, we're meant to be talking about teams, not just strikers. So save your Bamford talk until we get to the L section. We've covered Brighton. Burnley. Burnley's stock is non-existent.
It's a penny stock.
What happened in the offseason? It's just like they look terrible.
Yeah, they really do. And they even got Tarkowski back for game week 3, and so I thought, well, okay, maybe they've finally figured this thing out, you know, but it is not looking very good right now for Burnley. Wood is actually another player who was in theory one of these players to who could be valuable in that 6.5 price range as well, but I don't know what happened. I don't know if it's because they kind of slightly screwy start or what, but presumably Deitch will figure it out. But it does feel like they need some youth or talent, or it's like all of these, like Aston Villa just spent like £100 million like invigorating their team, and Burnley kind of has the same.
They bought Dale Stevens. Kind of says it all. What is the ambition there?
Yeah.
The ambition is clearly just like it's like a Newcastle club run by people who might be actually more decent than Mike Ashley. But that still seems to be their level of ambition. Just keep the dollars rolling in and everyone move along.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. Like they know they've got a great coach in Deitch. And so they're just like, he'll figure it out no matter what we give him. Chelsea, interesting case. I'm gonna start off with a stock down here, Brandon. I don't know where you. I know they just won 4-0, but I am not blown away by what I've seen from Chelsea so far this season.
Oh no, that was not a convincing 4-0 win by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, two pens by Jorginho, just from some awful tackling by Crystal Palace. So yeah, I'm with you. Timo Werner. It's not. I don't even want to focus on Timo because I think he's just caught wrong place, wrong time. Yeah. But he is emblematic when you watch Chelsea play, how he is covering every quadrant of the pitch. And I don't know if it's because he's not been told what to do, or if he's just trying doggedly to go find the ball wherever it may be. But there is no game plan, and they are getting whatever results they're getting just based on the sheer class of the players that they have on the pitch, despite Frank Lampard. So, yeah, it's like their stock is down from an FPL perspective, just because we have no way of telling which version of Chelsea will show up week to week. So what's the point in investing in them? Now, Pulisic is back. Is that something you would consider on a wild card, just taking the plunge on a player who looked sensational at the end of last season?
No. I mean, the real problem right now is I think I really underestimated what a team looks like without like a real number 10, you know, and they had Hazard for years, who's obviously a fantastic player. Willian filled in that role extremely well last season. And now it's like, it's kind of nobody, I guess. In theory, it's Kai Havertz, but he's not ready for it yet. And so you just have Timo Werner sort of running on the left with like kind of nothing to do. You've got Tammy Abraham, who is like, I don't know how he keeps. By the way, I'm reminded right now, Brandon, of a Reddit commenter who said that who like just hated our Chelsea discussion on a recent podcast.
Fair enough,
everyone like hates the section where we talk about their team. Okay, so if you were like listening right now and you would just hate what we're saying, like bear in mind, like I'm sure you do know more about your particular, we have to be generalists here on this fantasy podcast, you know, I'm sure we're getting some stuff wrong here, but my own eyes, Brad, are telling me that there is no one to set up the play for Chelsea, and everything that happens seems like it happens kind of by chance just like you were saying. I mean, so Pulisic, like, yeah, he doesn't solve their problem though, unless like, Timo Werner is going to play as the number 10 now, and Pulisic is going to play on the left. I mean, how did Werner and Pulisic even play together? Like, I'm not even sure I understand how that works, you know? Like, I guess Werner goes back to playing up front and
some kind of overlapping sort of situation. But then you're like, well, what about the fullbacks? And we've got this question from Chad Nyland, who wants to know what to do with Reece James. And this was a pick like that you brought in Reece James for game week 4. And now his spot is not certain. And Chilwell looked You know, he was the standout bright spot for Chelsea in that Palace game, and kudos to him. Fantastic performance. But Reece James, is that's a risk that I don't think you want to be taking at this point, just given what we saw against Palace.
No, I mean, that partly inspired the wild card too. That was like taking two transfers. Like when you bring in a player and they've immediately lost their spot, it's like not only did you burn a transfer to bring in a non-playing player, but now you got to burn a transfer to take them out of your team. And it was such a mess. And yeah, I think, by the way, I didn't burn what I thought about doing this week. And this is like another reason why burning four for a defender is just so often a mistake. I was planning to burn four for DCL, to turn Werner to DCL, and then turn Davis into Robertson. Robertson. So I would have had a net interest. Like, so when DCL scores like 5 minutes into that Everton match, I'm like, oh my God, I've just like completely blown it. But that's it. He ends up on no bonus points. And then Robertson gets a -1. So it was a total of 5 points, from them. But if I'd burned, my wild card, it would have been the equivalent of 1 point, or if I burned four, that is. And the two players that I got, they both got 2 points because I had Ailing come off the bench, almost scored, by the way.
I hope people are writing this down.
It's a very long and boring story, but the point is, it was a net +3. Like, just not burning four was a net +3 on the game week. Yeah. Even though the two players only got a combined 4 points, it was still better than I would have had otherwise.
Yeah. Well, pretty fair to say that Chelsea have a huge potential here, but we are not seeing it yet. Crystal Palace, though, I'm putting in that same camp of Brighton, where I was dazzled by Palace the first couple of weeks. Yep. And now they are reverting to the mean for Palace, sadly, because I like the good version of Palace. Very fun. Totally. But they will remain FPL relevant as long as Mitchell keeps his starting spot. He has been a really good 4.0 option in your defense. And I think if you're on wild card, he's still worth looking at.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. And I would almost be tempted to just spend 5 million on Gaita, and just feel a little more covered as far as my goalkeeper is concerned. They have a great run coming up. So I'll make them like a tentative buy because I think that or stock up because they really don't have a super difficult match until, I guess, Wolves away in game week 7. But other than that, you have to go to game week 14 in mid-December before they really have a truly tough match. Just sort of interesting. I think that they're I'm with you, though. Like, you can't concede 4 goals in one half and have people walk away feeling good about, where you are.
I do think Zaha's stock that was briefly up at the start of the season just down, given the basically, there's just too much competition around that price point. We're going to talk about Everton next and James Rodriguez. And basically, that's a set and forget in your 7 to 8 million midfielder price bracket. So Zaha is like immediately pushed off the table for me. So as far as Everton is concerned, I now have a triple up. I moved hard on James Rodriguez yesterday. Yeah. And it was after the Manchester City performance Phil Foden, I thought, was one of the better players for Manchester City on the weekend, but what is going on there? I don't know. And I'm looking at my squad and I've got Foden next to Daniel Podence, and I'm just thinking, this is not firepower.
Yeah.
So now suddenly I'm tripled up on Everton, and I don't know if I feel great, even though Everton are the story of through game week 4. I don't know if I feel great about that. So now I'm looking at Lucas Digne, who I still think is a great fullback for FPL managers, is probably going to be the one to make way, because I just think position by position, DCL and James Rodriguez would be the must-haves for me. And Digne, I think, is an easy one to make way to be able to fund other things that need to happen in your team.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with Lucas Digne is Jordan Pickford, really. I mean, Digne does a lot of good things, but Pickford just seems like he's got a massive blunder like in every game now.
Watching them play this weekend, one of the things against Digne is actually James Rodriguez, because I was thinking, well, wonderful delivery from Digne, But James is taking so many corners. He's on most of the set pieces. Yeah. Any of that service that you might think that Dean would provide, as good as he has looked, and I think Dean has looked pretty good this season, James is just canceling out his fantasy contribution. So, like, yeah, whatever upside there was with Dean, I just think there it doesn't exist at the moment.
Yeah, it probably just makes sense, right? Like, if you have a midfielder who can take those corners, then it's extra safety, right? Because your defender can – Lucas Dean can then become a covering defender or kind of, you know, stand – 20 yards back, possibly get a ball from James or just be, you know, ready on the counterattack. Yeah, I mean, I cannot believe how good the balls that James Rodriguez is sending in. Like, yeah, it's like the goals almost feel like they're just like a byproduct of the other stuff he's doing. You know, it's like, I mean, that the goal that he scored, the first goal was created by James Rodriguez, right? He like stuck a back foot out, intercepted the ball. You know, I think the first one was, I know DeCorey was the second one. I think the first one was Iwobi. And it was just beautiful. I mean, you know, like just he's moving, like what he's doing is so impressive that he ends up in these spots where he's just, there's no one around him, you know, because he's just discombobulating his defenses so much, and he's just a really fun player, just creating chances, and I love him. I'm a total convert.
So DCL, let's talk about him real quick, because he's just on fire. For the last 2 weeks, he's had sort of Giroud-esque returns in scare quotes, where he's still been doing the business, but small returns, especially compared to some of his compatriots. Peter Fluke asks, my only clear takeaway is that DCL is pretty essential. His prowess in the air is just too much. So I think we both agree. It's pretty cut and dry. DCL is easy. Slot him in. Are you alarmed at all, though, or he's not getting huge double-digit returns in these massive blowouts? I mean, granted, he did have a hat trick, so I don't know what I'm complaining about. I'm not really complaining.
No, I mean, to be honest, he's actually not in my current wildcard squad. I think he's a really good player, for sure, but he's very cheap. But I don't know. I don't like love their upcoming fixtures. And I don't know if I want to be doubled up on the Everton attack. I'm just not sure. I'm just not completely convinced. And like, in some ways, I'm just like, now that he's like 7.6, I'm like, I'm not even convinced he's a better asset than Richarlison in that team. You know, at 7 million versus 8 million, yeah, for sure. But not having him in my squad at all right now, I don't know. I don't feel like it's like a Jamie Vardy situation where you're just like, you've just got to get on this guy. I'm still not completely convinced. Maybe I'm like the last one on the planet. He's obviously in great form, but I don't know. It feels like it's
there's something about him as a player, and Peter talks about his prowess in the air. There was something about his style where he could still get a goal from nothing. And I think I agree. Like, the fixtures don't look awesome for Everton upcoming, though Everton look fantastic. They are currently, by the letter of the table, the best team in the league right now. So what's not to love? And I think that he'll come through in moments where you might not expect him to. So I appreciate your stance, like, on a wild card where you have all the options, but if you currently have him like I do, I'm beyond happy.
Of course. And I mean, for sure. Yeah. All right. So let's move on to Leeds. I think they're a big stock up, right?
Wow, you're just skipping over Fulham entirely. That is a straight dip. All right,
just because I did it by accident, let's do Leeds and then we'll go back to Fulham. Okay.
So, all right.
Yeah. So Leeds, what do they have? I think they have 7 points in the season now. They are looking completely safe. Feels like they're going to be a team that certainly stays up this year. Probably stays up as long as Marcelo Bielsa is there. Fun team to watch. Lots of good performances. I actually think that Luke Eileen has like a little bit of Matt Doherty a couple seasons ago in him. Super, I like that. Yeah, super attacking, really creative. Like, I don't know if I'm sure you're watching that whole match, but had that run right at the end of the first half where he just sort of like, it was like he nodded. I can't remember who hit the ball, but it was like, he's basically like, I'm going to bolt like as soon as the whistle goes, and ended up, you know, one-on-one with the keeper. Benjamin Mendy had a terrible game. And I was like, you know, this guy just like, he's clearly got some goals and assists in him. Has not happened so far this season, but I love him as a player. I think he's if you were in a wild card this week, I would absolutely have Luke Ayling.
Yeah, Ailing is great. I do wonder if Cleish is the one to get just by virtue of the pens. And I like mm-hmm. Leeds enough to consider investing in them, but I'm just not convinced where the best place is to invest. I don't know that they're going to keep a ton of clean sheets, even though I do like the Ailing shout. And then Bamford, I'm kind of like, well, you've got a very spotty reputation. Is this actually going to be the season that you figure it out? So then I land in the midfield, where I feel like the price point kind of suits my level of investment in Leeds as a club. And I land on Cleish at 5.6. So that feels best to me when I'm just looking at the FPL prices.
Yeah, but I just think in general, there's a lot of interesting FPL fodder in this team. And Rodrigo has not shown it yet, but he's down to 5.8 million now. I really think that there's going to come a time, Brandon, where a lot of us have Rodrigo in our team. And I think it's just hasn't happened yet. But I think there's this whole thing about how Bielsa's team is like, it's like any new player basically has like a month where they've got to like whip themselves into shape. And I mean, you saw it in the Man City match, right? Like they were just quite clearly like more ready for like the physical rigors of a Premier League season.
It's just like Riyad Mahrez was just beyond awful in that match. And I mean, that guy knows how to obviously win a Premier League campaign, but I don't know, his mentality has just been so diminished, I think, during his time at City. And then him and Mendy just crippling that City team. But you're right, Leeds was there to capitalize. They played with heart. They played with a game plan in mind, and they succeeded. So, that's definitely something that points toward we will be talking about Leeds again and again throughout the season.
Fulham, we've talked about them a lot in the podcast. Let's go back to them now. I guess the first thing is just El Tigre, just to keep it on fantasy for a second. El Tigre says, Mitrovic, stick or bust. What do you think about Mitro?
It's a good question. Well, I think you sell Mitrovic. It's just like, it's an unmitigated disaster at Fulham. And I thought their performance against Wolves in Game Week 4 was obviously their best by far this season. But I don't think that somehow it's miraculously going to turn around. They have showed their face. They've shown their face. And if Lookman is going to be your answer to this problem, like, God help you. He had some decent moves. He released Mitrovic with his beautiful ball. However, it's just like, you've got to go. This is the worst team in the league. And we saw this with Norwich City, where everyone thought, well, Pukki can score a goal against anyone. So if the price is right, sure, let's just ride with Pukki. And it took us about a month to figure out, well, this is no good. The problem with Fulham is they do not have a Todd Cantwell. So without that, and maybe Lookman becomes this, but I highly doubt it.
Yeah.
There's no reason to you to look at Fulham at all. So Mitrovic has got to go for everyone. Harrison Reed, who I kind of like earmarked as, hey, he's a great midfielder. You'll never have to play. Well, thank God, because he has this mysterious knock, and I wouldn't even want to play him anyway. So it's just like, put up the caution tape, stay away.
I think that's it. We've talked about Fulham as a team on previous podcasts, so I don't think we need to go into that too much. But yeah, I mean, it was actually super frustrating. I mean, in some ways, they played their best match of the season this weekend. But you know, it was also another losing match, and Mitrovic set up two players for great chances, and in both cases, they kind of blew it. And you're like, right, it kind of doesn't matter how good Mitrovic is because he just doesn't have anyone around him. I mean, maybe once Scotty Parker gets sacked, like they can do something different. I mean, like no offense to him, because I do like Scott Parker, but like, just like what happens now is, you know, one of the like two players get the ball on one of the wings, they kick it back and forth for about 25 seconds, and then they send in some crummy cross to Mitro, and then like, you know, nothing happens, and you know, keeper scoops the ball up, restarts play, eventually fill in with the ball back, you know, kick it around, it's another bad cross in. And it's like, that is the whole strategy right now. And it just doesn't feel like you want any fantasy assets for a team like that.
Yeah, and just to be clear, no new manager is going to salvage this. They just don't have the players. And that was their issue coming up. They're a team built to play in the championship. And that That's the bad part of it. Okay, so let's move on. One more team to talk about before we take a break, and it's Leicester City. This has been a roller coaster, my friend.
Talk about weird. I know. By the way, just Areola, by the way, for Fulham, did have a good game. I wanted to give one player on that team some love. He had a pretty good match. All right, so Leicester.
Congratulations, Areola. Yeah, wonderful.
Okay, sorry. I mean, they did lose, but I thought he played. He kept minute. I mean, you know. So anyway, all right. Leicester. I would have felt really good about them clearly until today, and I don't know how they lose 3-0 at home. It's such an inexplicable loss that you're like, do you just write it off and like pretend it didn't happen? Like, is it instructive or is it so fluky that it says maybe more about West Ham being better than we thought than Leicester being worse? You know, I don't know. It's such a strange one, don't you think?
They're flaky. They're just a flaky team. And I think this is, I think, like I was saying with Palace and Brighton, you see these teams early on in the season reverting to the mean. Like, you're kind of going to get what you expect. And I think it's kind of the same but different with Leicester, where I think this is what we're going to get for the rest of the season, in that I have no bloody idea which level of performance they'll give week to week. And, I mean, to describe them as a flaky team, I think, is fitting of Brendan Rodgers, who's probably one of the flakiest managers in the league right now. Bless him. Yeah. But I think for the players you'd want to look at, like Jamie Vardy, I think that's just too expensive an outlay for a player who's heavily relying on penalties to get his hauls.
Yeah, it is so true. I mean, how many of his goals are in penalties this season? Is it like three, I think? Three of his five? I don't really know what else to say. I mean, I think that Harvey Barnes is kind of interesting, but again, he's, you know, I guess he had one goal that got chalked off for an offside today, but you know, he's like this sort of heavily touted player, but he's kind of expensive at 7.1 million and, you know, only one goal and one assist in the season so far. And honestly, he's played, you know, 360 minutes, and you might have expected a little more than that, to be quite honest. So I'm not hugely convinced.
Harvey Barnes is one of those classic players where he's betrayed by his FPL price. Like, he was giving in sensational performances last season, and it all made sense because you could get him in at, what was he, like 6 or 6.5?
Yeah.
Just marginally different, but somehow it makes sense within a general fantasy squad price structure. But now he's at the point where he's still just as good a player, but he just doesn't do the same level of things with any level of consistency that other players around that price point do, i.e. James Rodriguez. So that's where you're left with him.
Yeah. Castagna is the one player who I would want on this team. You know, it just, he's got, he's sort of a classic fantasy fullback. Will occasionally get you some clean sheets, but you're basically getting him for the attacking returns, and he's still only up to 5.7. It's not that much. So he's a wild card to consider. If I finally decide that I can break free of a Liverpool defender, Brandon, may end up with Castagna, but right now I can't do it. So let's take a break. We'll actually talk about Liverpool in just a second here. All right. You've counted on restaurants, now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. I use DoorDash all the time, Brandon. Love it for the Chipotle that is about a mile and a half from my house, just a little too far to walk. A little too far. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be safely left outside your door with their contactless delivery drop-off setting. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's $5 off your order and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and use code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget, that's code BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
All right, gang, the wait is finally over. Football is back. Whatever kind of football it is that you watch, it's all back. And you might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager on than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all those great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE, it's all one word, at betonline.ag. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, Brandon, our stock up, stock down slash hold discussion continues. This is interesting. It's fun to go through all these teams and sort of get my bearings in order a little bit. It's obviously we're not far enough into the season to have like strong opinions, but there's some pretty big decisions that have been made about some of these clubs. And I think Liverpool is one of the biggest ones. And
yeah.
And I have a couple questions here. They're kind of in the same, same realm. Kyle T said, I know a lot of us wanted the season prepared to have Trent for the whole season. It's a category I include myself in. Does this early goal rush tempt you to go 4.5 at the back and spend the money on the midfield? FPL Quaka says, do we drop the double Liverpool defense? What does it take for a manager to change their long-term FPL strategy? That's a whole podcast, that question, Brandon.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, for me, it's on a wild card right now. The question I have for you is there truly, we now have four games of evidence, as well as, you know, last season. Is there truly a significant difference between Robertson and Trent?
Yeah, I think there is. 100%.
Okay.
I think the difference is, like, how does that translate to your FPL team? It's a slightly different story, but what Trent brings to the table is just a little more sophisticated, I would say. Like, Robbo has decent delivery from the left, but he's just got, that's what it is, decent delivery from the left. Trent has incredible set pieces, decent delivery from many places on the pitch. He's just kind of the better player. If you're talking about FPL, how much of a difference does that 0.5 make? And I mean, if you believe in form, I think that it's definitely worth going for Robertson because the form is on his side.
Yeah.
If you subscribe to the idea that you still have to go with a Liverpool defender. And I think, like, as a Virgil van Dijk owner saying this, I would underscore the fact that if you think, oh, the way for me to skirt around this Liverpool defense's dicey question is maybe just go for the cheapest defender, whether that's Gomez or Virgil van Dijk, relatively speaking. No, I feel like you have to be all in if you're going to play the Liverpool defense game. And what that means to me, it's either Robertson or Trent. And at this point in the season, like, so I feel like this is a leading question, Josh. So now you're trying to make up your mind. Are you willing to, in a sense, downgrade Trent to Robertson?
It's not leading in the sense that I know what the answer is. I mean, I'm asking, you know, I think it's a question a lot of people are asking now. Like, I'm not sure that I know the answer. I know that for me, I came into the season feeling like Trent, I mean, honestly, based on last return, where he was like one of the greatest defensive assets in FPL history. And now it feels like based on, and I've watched, you know, like most people who play fantasy, I have Liverpool players and I've watched every minute of their matches so far this season. And it feels like everything's going through Robertson. It feels like he is, like, so central to what they're doing. And Trent is just, it feels like he's a little more peripheral. It feels like it also feels like he's getting caught on the break a lot more too. And it's, you know, I don't know if this is because he had some kind of minor injury or something in the off season, but he just does not seem as sharp to me as Robertson. And he'll always have those free kicks, you know, and obviously, you know, just Game Week 3 created a bunch of chances and in that match. And, you know, I ended up on, even with a yellow card, he ended up on 3 bonus points. And so, in no way am I, and maybe the answer is to have both, even still, even if they conceded 7 goals today. But I think that I'm just not sure that Trent is that much more valuable than Robertson right now. And that could change later. But I think at the moment, I feels like Robertson at 0.5 cheaper is kind of a straightforward pick in some ways.
Yeah, I would be tempted in your situation to definitely just lock it in with Robertson. And I think that's fine. I mean, the easier question to answer about Liverpool is, do I need to have Mo Salah? Yes, obviously.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah. I mean, the only other thing is Mane, now that he's coming back from from COVID, does that actually make him like a super safe when he comes back? Is he like a super safe pick?
He's invincible now. He's got the immunity
for at least a while. I mean, I don't know. He doesn't get injured very much, and he will hopefully, fingers crossed, recover perfectly fine from COVID. I don't think he has any symptoms. Yeah.
This is a Mo Salah podcast, and I'm done entertaining this debate. And, you know, Mane, wonderful, fantastic, world-class talent, yeah. But it's not happening.
For the record, I'm talking about having both. Salah and Mane, which is a strategy I talked about at the end of last season. I was like, do we just overthink it and we should just have Salah and Mane just like the whole time? And pre-COVID diagnosis, pre-game week four, that would have been the best strategy. Those would have been the two best premium players to have. I mean, you know, I guess Son is kind of his own weird, just below premium tier, but
yeah.
Certainly he's been more valuable than Kevin De Bruyne or even Sterling on the season.
Okay, so that's where we want to go next, to Manchester City. So if you're talking about going in on Spurs, I assume you have to be thinking about Son. You're talking about a double up with Mane and Salah. What that makes me think of is when I see your wild card, you're not going to have any Manchester City attackers in that wild card. Is that correct?
That is incorrect. I still have De Bruyne. I cannot bring myself to drop him. It's why? It's because I have Ryan Brewster as my third forward, and that frees up a lot of.
Yeah.
Okay. So I actually was able to turn Daniel Podence into Son on this wild card.
I can't wait to get to just stick it to Podence when we get to Wolves. So let's put a pin in that one.
He looks so good those first two matches too. But he looked. I think I joked on Twitter today. I can't wait to share with my grandkids the highlight reel of Podence's performance today.
Your grandkids will have no attention span, so it's great that it'll be such a short highlights package. Yeah,
exactly.
We have a question here from Rake regarding Manchester City. With many players in the premium bracket and below getting returns, is it time to part ways with KDB? I think we should just expand this conversation to where we talk about Sterling and to a lesser degree players like Foden and Mahrez. You have, it is quite alarming, like the drop off in intensity, just momentum, whatever sort of descriptive word you want to throw out there. And then on top of that, Pep just with this, he's like Jack at the end of The Shining, where it's like he's losing his mind. He can't stop smiling and laughing. And he's like, can you believe this? Isn't this crazy? Like these awful performances. Who would have thought it? There are not a lot of positive signs in that City camp. Now, I think that, you know, going back to the Chelsea conversation, is there are teams that will still be bailed out again and again, just because all of their players are incredible and super gifted. So I'm with you. KDB feels still undroppable, and it's the penalty Premier League sort of thing too, or fantasy penalty league, I got that wrong, where that just keeps Kevin De Bruyne up right in that conversation, given that he has the spot kicks.
And the only question is De Bruyne versus Sterling. Is there a case for going with Sterling instead? It just doesn't seem wise to me, as discombobulated as they are, to not have any Man City coverage. They're just too capable of massive returns. But I don't know. I mean, I'm honestly throwing this to you because I don't have an answer to this. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Sterling versus De Bruyne, it feels like it's actually quite tight, especially if Sterling is showing a little more confidence. You know, his three goals in his last two games. I mean, it's almost a shame for him that they're going into international break now, because he probably wants to keep building that momentum.
I suppose it could come down to what kind of manager you want to be this season, where I think Kevin De Bruyne will be the more consistent FPL asset. He has the, you know, all the pluses in that column for a fantasy player, with the set piece duties and everything that we were just talking about, where then there is Sterling, who is higher risk, but potentially higher reward. So is that the kind of manager that you want to be? And, you know, this is usually a conversation that we reserve for a game week 29, where you're like, well, I'm way behind in my mini league. What do I do? And then in that situation, you're like, well, you get Raheem Sterling. You don't get Kevin De Bruyne. Yeah. Where we are right now, I'm still with KDB.
It would help if he looked good in these matches, you know? Like, it's like, I mean, I feel like I'm keeping Katie, but it's kind of like Trent, to be honest. Like it would help if they looked better, you know? And like Trent had a pretty good game week three. I will give him that. You know, in his case, defense is part of the game and he's getting let down there. But De Bruyne, I mean, the last two matches, I mean, it doesn't feel like he's just like putting chances on a platter for the squad. And they're just failing to capitalize. It just feels like he's slightly peripheral. Like he's kind of maybe not playing in his best position, you know, and which he kind of isn't. But I wonder if David Silva being gone is just has really thrown their attack into a little bit of a, you know, tumult.
Well, less him. I think it's them missing a true number nine that has really impacted them. Because Sterling, try as he might, like he can occasionally make that work for him. But where De Bruyne excels is when there are all these different runs flooding the box and he can pick somebody out. And I don't think it matters where he is on the pitch for that to work. And just the way they were set up over the weekend, where it was Sterling and Foden and Mahrez across the front, and Mahrez is just not that guy who runs in behind. Sterling can try, and Foden more wants to collect the ball at the top of the D. So there aren't those runs being made for Kevin De Bruyne, and I think that's muted him, and I think you could really see how frustrated he was. So
yeah,
I'm less concerned about his form. I just feel like they need to get at least Jesus back for them to get purring again.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, and he's supposed to be back, I think, on the 24th. So that would be, I guess that would be game week six. Of course, these are all just like, you know, that far out, you're just kind of making a prediction. But that's the current estimate that's up on the site right now. So that would only be one more game week to kind of stick it out. You know, they do play Arsenal at home. And as you said before, he's on spot kicks, which does work in his favor. But
I love a corner kick taker, Joshua. You know I do.
Yeah, and pens. You know, that pens are huge for him. So it's huge for any player on pens this season is a player worth considering.
Yeah.
All right. Man United, stock way, way up, Brandon, as high as it can be. I'm sure.
Uh-huh. Go on.
Oh, my God. What a start. This is like I never would have predicted them starting off this poorly. It's so... I'm so surprised. I mean, they, you know, even that Brighton match, which they really kind of won in the flukiest of ways. Just a weird one.
It's strange. I don't quite know how to explain it because it's not like they came back not full strength. Especially the last couple of weeks, like they only could play the starting 11 that he would want to play.
Yeah.
He has to pick and choose with the center backs, but so what has gone wrong? And I just think if you look to a man, the performances just aren't as convincing as they were toward the first half of 2020.
Can I throw out one thing? This is actually like really like obvious and lame, but I do think it's worth like just talking about for a second, which is like, I mean, like the COVID happened, right? Like the COVID happened. Like Paul Pogba had it. Mason Greenwood, you know, invited a girl up to his room and got, you know, and that just sort of threw things off for the team. And he probably didn't start the first match because of it. And, you know, even Liverpool today, where they scored seven goals. I mean, how much of like Sadio Mane, you know, and Thiago getting the virus and maybe all of these players being worried they have it as well. How much of that, they're only human, right? It's like,
sure.
You know, like
the level of anxiety that they're having to deal with while you deal with the anxiety of just being a professional entertainer.
Totally. Yeah. And so I just wonder if that is, I mean, it's such a fluky thing for these two teams to concede this many goals. And I just wonder if, I know COVID is like a messed up training and like a shorter off season, all that stuff. But I just wonder if they like the on the ground, like players of my team have this thing right now, if that throws them off a little bit.
It may be. And that may be. But something you kind of think where we're heading with this discussion is it seems like it is an emotional thing. It's not a personnel issue. It's probably not a physical fitness issue, even though I don't know if Pogba had COVID-19, is he still suffering from effects? I mean, I assume the medical staff would make sure he was fit enough to actually play these 90 minutes, but I'm with you. And throw on top of that, the organization is, kind of notably not like teetering at the moment. Yeah. You hear all this chatter too about bringing in Jadon Sancho, and you, if you're the attacking players and you feel like you really earned a lot of accolades last season, why do you have to? I mean, obviously it's just business, and that's how top teams keep developing, as they bring in new and highly touted players. But sure, it's another emotional thing to hang over them.
Yeah, and it felt like they were such a tight knit unit last summer. Maybe too much so, really. I mean, because there was really no rotation, and they kind of burned down in the end. But it's like they burned out last summer. It was like that was like the best they could do. And now, and Martial, I mean, of course, yeah. Did LaMelo make a gigantic meal of what he did? Sure, yeah. But like what a Marshall, like you can't do that. Like that's just, you know, come on, give me a break. Like it was,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, LaMelo was just doing what he had to do. He was just kind of like, and you could see him when he dropped to the ground. It was almost like he was ashamed in a way.
Yeah.
How slowly he did crumble to the ground. He was just like, yeah. This is the way it's got to be, man.
Yeah, and like Juan Mata would have done that. You know, like even like players who like everybody loves, like when another player hits you in the face, like you are – you are obligated to fall to the ground and make a meal out of it. Sometimes it doesn't get called, sometimes it does, but you have to do it.
So that's violent conduct. He's out for weeks, and
yeah. Do you know when he's back, Brandon? He's back November 7th.
Wow, it's so like, far away.
It's like over a month from now. That is, and so it's going to take him what? Like, I mean, I that feels that's a long way to like in between matches. Like I imagine he'll have to like take some time to get back up and running. And it makes me feel like that whole Man United team is just like, stay away for several weeks, you know, like check back in at game week 9 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk again in game week 9. All right. Newcastle. What to say here other than the truth? The truth is back.
Truth is back. He's on pens, which is obviously hugely important this season. He is the focal point of their attack. I was actually at this thought yesterday. It was kind of maybe harsh on Eddie Howe, but it was like, was it just more Callum Wilson than Howe? Like Callum Wilson is so good. It's like he is making, I mean, St. Maximin had a pretty good game too, but like just like that guy is good. Like a team that has Callum Wilson shouldn't be getting relegated. Like he was like, I don't know, I'm just like hugely impressed. Like he's basically going to keep Newcastle up this season. And
yeah,
he's cheap. I mean, I think he's at 6.3 or 6.4 million. The Newcastle attack looks a lot better. It's not Everton levels better, but like it looks like they look competent for sure. I don't know. I'm sort of like, I mean, their defense is, you know, a little more of a wild card. I still think that Jamal Lewis at 4.5 could be tempting, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't really have a whole lot to add. I don't have too many thoughts about Newcastle. Wilson is somewhat intriguing. I think St. Maximin, yeah, I agree. He had a really good game against Burnley, but what we know, what limited things we know about St. Maximin now is that he is just a spurt player.
Totally.
And he'll have one game a month in which he looks really appealing to FPL managers. So I'm not going to read too much immediately into that performance. So yeah, the main takeaway is Wilson is a perfectly adequate striker to put up front in your team.
Okay, I think more than adequate actually, but yes, I think he's adequate to good. Brandon, I'm going to give him an 8.1 in my 10-point ranking.
All right, we'll have to get the truth. The truth, Rotten Tomatoes meter is going to have to get involved in this one.
All right, a couple more teams to go here. Sheffield United. Is there anything we have to say here? I guess Ryan Brewster signing is the one piece of news.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, who cares? I don't know. I'm so over this team. I was over them in the off season, and if you'll allow me to pat myself on the back, I was just like when we were doing our preseason coverage, it's just like I don't see how this team doesn't immediately get found out and how they can rise to the same level they did in the 2019-20 season. And it's just like Stoke City all over the place with them. I'm just not fond of it, and I don't want to think about it.
They're not in a great spot right now. They do play Fulham at home in game week 5, and then it's Liverpool away, Man City at home, Chelsea away in the next 3. So that Fulham match, a lot hinges on it. They really need to win that one, and because they're going to lose the next 3. So they could be on you know, 0 to 3 points after the first 8 weeks of the season, which would put them in an incredibly tough spot. So I don't know. Yeah. But Ryan Brewster, I think at 4.5 million, I mean, he's really talented forward, did really well for Swansea last season when he was there, almost got them promoted. And I think what they really have lacked is talent, like just like actual, like attacking talent, you know, they're like a really well-drilled team. You know, they've been together a long time, but they just need some like proper talent in there. And so I think that the Brewster signing is really good.
Yeah. Helpful. Not to be super negative, but when you talk about needing talent, Brewster is the guy that you target. Like, that's not good enough. That's not good enough for them, to achieve anything substantial. So I am unconvinced.
Okay. All right. Well, let's revisit the Brewster thing in a month or so, you know, and see who's right and who's wrong. Because I think that he could be a valuable signing for them. All right. Southampton is next. Got to be a little bitter on the Southampton thing, right? They looked awful, completely awful. And now they've, McCarthy has 15 points in his last two. And suddenly their defense looks competent again. And it's like, where was this team game weeks 1 and 2 this season?
Yeah, I hate it. Yeah. Somebody who started with KWP and McCarthy and got rid of them going into game week 3. It stings a lot.
Yeah. That seemed like the right move, you know,
it did. And this was the window of opportunity these last 2 weeks of finishing off with West Brom. You look at the fixtures to come now for Southampton: Chelsea, Everton, Villa in the next three, and then Newcastle, Wolves, Manchester United, Brighton. I just think that the fixtures are getting a little more difficult. And the fact that if you got those defensive points out of Southampton, that was a fantastic deal. And now it's okay to walk away, I think, from Southampton. Danny Ings is the other side of that coin where I'm like, is it okay to walk away from Danny Ings right now as well?
I think it's really tricky. What the right thing to do with things, because he's, you know, 3 goals on the season already. He's on penalties, apparently. That feels like it's pretty locked in at this point, though. But at the same time, you do worry about whether he's going to get enough chances. And you know, Shea Adams is just like, if he can help him get some assists occasionally, or, you know, it's like it's a really
do poor something
finishing. Yeah. Yeah. So Shea Adams has been a little frustrating. It feels like we could have a different perspective on the Southampton team if he was finishing a little bit more, Adams. But I think Ings is the one player to still consider. I think McCarthy is fine. I think he's fine I don't think any of the 4.5 keepers are good. Like, I think they're all like, Martinez maybe looks the best of the lot, but none of them are like mind-blowingly good. You're going to get a lot of zilch returns out of them, you know. So I think that he's totally acceptable as a long-term goalkeeper at 4.5.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So that's Southampton covered. They've shown a lot of good aspects, but you do worry about the fixtures to come. Then it's your new fascination, Josh, Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
So you are just riding high. The wild card gets triggered. Mostly, yep. So you can play Kane and Son together. Wonderful.
Yeah, we'll see how much I can lift. Like, everyone who's had them so far this season has like it seems like no one seems to have gotten it right. Like, the only way to do it was if you just kept the four, like if you kept those two and just never moved them and just kept the faith the entire time, despite Mourinho saying that Son was out for a month or whatever. So they just have a great run of fixtures coming up. Their attack. Harry Kane looks the best he's looked in what, like 3 years, would you say? I mean, it looks like I can't remember the last time he looked this good on the pitch.
He's great. I mean, his heads up style of play, like, I mean, just the quick taking of the dead ball to feed Son, his first assist of the day. It's really impressive, like how he's really enhanced his vision. Yeah. But I do think I have to. So I may be eating my words with Ryan Brewster. I'm definitely now eating my words with Højlberg. I thought Højlberg was just this weird Jose Mourinho signing of like he just wanted a guy who would do whatever he was told to do. But I think he has. He looked fantastic today against Manchester United. I think he's looked pretty good in all the matches that he's played. And I that's definitely a driver that I think that they were missing. So it's all upside. The stock is up with Spurs.
Yeah, and I mean the one question now is what happens with Aurier and Doherty? What a weird situation that is. Like Aurier could not have played better today. It's a weird one. And so, and Doherty has looked, I mean, honestly, pretty terrible, like ever since he's joined the club.
I just don't think that was a confusing signing to me. And I mean, Aurier is a crazy player, and but I just think he was very well suited to how Jose wanted to play. So I just didn't really understand the impulse to try to replace him. Yeah. So I think there's going to be a ton of competition in that spot. And then your man, Ben Davis, he's going to be Mr. Europa League for the next few months.
I know. Yeah. Him coming on and winning a pen immediately was you never want your player. But it was such a weird, what a fluky thing. You know, he came on the 78th minute or something. So the defense is a complete stay away. I mean, the Eric Dier experiment has to end soon, right? This can't go on much longer. Even though everyone seems to think he's a nice guy, like it's just not working. But I just love the way that Kane and Son are linking up. And I think what's really appealing about them too is that, yeah, I mean, look at Kevin De Bruyne is, you know, just hasn't done much at all this season. And we're sort of holding because we know who he is, you know, and he's 11.7 million right now is what his price is in the game. You know, Heung-Min Son is 9 million. It's you're just not laying out as much cash. And even Kane, yeah, 10.5 million, you know, pretty big price. But for a player of his caliber, 10.5 is like it's a fair price to a bargain. You know, I mean, this is a player who has scored 29 goals two different occasions this season. I mean, when he's at his best, he's at like peak Sergio Aguero levels, you know? So I think that, I don't know. I'm going to take a chance on both them. And the way I'm going to see it though, Brandon, is I'm not going to make the mistake that everyone seems to make with these guys, which is to move them in and out. I'm not going to do what y'all think I'm going to do, Brandon. I'm just going to keep them. They're both going to get 4 week runs. Okay.
Okay.
And after all game right. week eight, we'll do another pod. We'll see how it went, much like the Ryan Brewster challenge. We're going to see see everything worked out. But I'm not going to tinker after one bad game week. I'm just going to keep it for 4 weeks and see how things go.
All right. Fair enough. So West Brom, a team that I have genuinely nothing to say about. They have stymied me now 2 weeks in a row. You know, I kept Timo Werner on a wild card in game week 3 so he could play West Brom. That didn't go well. Yeah. I dumped Werner for Danny Ings this week so he could play West Brom. He was not up to the challenge. So West Brom has done only one thing. They have made me miserable. I don't actually enjoy watching them, nor do I enjoy thinking about them from a fantasy perspective.
Wow, those are some strong words. I think that Diangana and Pereira are kind of fun to watch. And that's about it. The defense is bad. Caleb Robinson is whatever. He's fine. They're not boring. I would say that I don't. You said you don't enjoy watching them play. I don't mind watching them play. And I like that they seem to have a little bit of cohesiveness in their attacks. Like just from like a, not like fantasy aside for a second, like just watching them play on the pitch can be sort of interesting. And I thought like there's some playmakers in that team, but yeah, I think from a fantasy perspective, we can kind of just move on, to the next team. Cause even Pereira is like at 6 million, it's just too much for a West Brom player. All right. West Ham. So they have just outscored Wolves and Leicester by a combined 7-0. What is going on here? I need your West Ham breakdown, Brandon.
Was it FPL Stag, our friend Anthony, who tweeted that David Moyes is like proving that working from home is just like the way of the future?
He won work from home.
I don't know. I mean, they genuinely have great players, so it's just great to see when it all clicks. I think Antonio is probably a standout option, and after his great game against Wolves last week, Pablo Fornals, I was really excited to see him get on the score sheet against Leicester. I think like he is one of those, he is the Juan Mata of West Ham, both by degree of how many smiles per minute he gives on the pitch. So it's like a just looks like a joyful guy, but he's also an amazing player. So, and I mean, it all kind of falls into place as an actual team with an actual hierarchy, with Declan Rice even behind that. Like, wow, they have an actual spine, yeah, and they have players that are, they're wide and central, and it all works. And yeah, if Aaron Cresswell is playing well, then we're all going to win. So yeah, the question then remains, do I have the guts to actually buy a West Ham player? And somehow I'm not quite there yet.
No, and I mean, Antonio would be the only one to really consider, I think, at this point. It's only $6.3 million. It's pretty cheap. But they've got a pretty bad run coming up. And could he score in any one of those matches? Sure. But it's still Spurs away, Man City at home, Liverpool away. Just a really tough start of the season for West Ham. And so let's see. I mean, if they acquit themselves well in those three or nick a draw or something like that, one of those matches, then they've got a really nice run after that. I think they're going to be like a fun holiday team because everyone's so cheap on that team. So yeah, you can kind of load up on those players.
Right. Yeah. And it's just like you were saying with West Brom, where you're like the good players on a poor team are not good enough to warrant those price tags. And then West Ham is, they're sort of overachieving their price. And that's, yes, I agree. That's totally going to make them a team that we're going to have to come back to time and again this season, which is fun. I like having teams like this.
Yeah, me too. And maybe in West Brom, Brandon. Maybe one day we'll look back at West Brom and
maybe, I hope. And we have this oddly large contingent of West Brom fans that listen to Always Cheating and our Patreon supporters. So, yep, you know, sorry for being really a real grump about it. But
well,
you know, I'm not in the best headspace right now, Jack.
They need to win a match, right? They need to if they collect a single point, then we can. Oh, they did. They did a win at Chelsea. So what am I talking about? They're in one out of 12, Brandon. They're doing fine. All right. So final team, Wolves, a troubling stretch for Wolves, even despite the win today. AJ says, questionable rotation tactics aside, what's going on with the Wolves offense? Offense. I don't know why I said offense in that weird way. Should we sell Raul?
No, I don't think you should sell Raul because... I mean, yada, 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 class is permanent. I don't know. I think he has just been starved for the ball a little bit, starved for chances. And, you know, Neto and Podence trying to establish themselves in the team. It's a different team than we're used to the last couple of seasons. And that's okay. You got to change. You got to evolve. And I think over time it will come together. And Raul's good enough where when he gets his big chances, more often than not, he will convert them into goals. I mean, it was really disappointing this week. A clear breakaway on Areola, who, as you were saying, had a pretty good game, and he just blew that. He's less concerning to me than like the rest of the team. I mean, the Podence experiment was kind of fun while it lasted, which was approximately like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
He is so small. I just cannot get over. There was a moment during the match against Fulham where Den Donker was laid out and the medical team came out and did concussion protocol. And Den Donker was sat there on his knees. He was standing on his knees like Dorf style. And Podence was standing right next to him. And it was like Podence was the same height standing next to Den Donker, who was on his knees. And it's alarming to see. I'll say
it's,
that much.
It's weird. It's weird just how he disappears in the pitch. Like you literally can't find him. You know, he's like surrounded by players who are a foot taller than him. That was fun while it lasted. But the real problem is if he isn't playing well, then it really does seem to affect Jimenez because without Doherty as well, they decided not to play Traore as some sort of, they were treating this like a preseason friendly or something. Like it didn't seem like they were putting their best foot forward. It doesn't feel like, I mean, how does Jimenez get the ball? I know that like traditionally they haven't really had a great number 10 anyway, but like, how is he getting the ball? Like who's giving, I'm not saying that Jimenez is a bad fantasy asset even, but like, it does seem like it's a little bit like Ings where you're like, well, he's going to have to make the most of the one chance he gets in the match because otherwise it's going to be starved for chances.
That's the thing, right? Like the great appeal of the best FPL strikers is they just get a zillion chances, and by by mathematic principles, they'll convert one or two because they have so many opportunities. And then you've got right. Ings and Jimenez, yeah, where it's you're asking a lot of them. So it's a worry. So where are you at with Wolves on a wild card? Do you think you're going to persist with their defense? We were talking on the Patreon pod this week about how they actually rate pretty poorly when it comes to conceding. Is it just on set pieces that they're conceding?
I think it was just like their XGC. I'm not sure what it is after today's match, but it was like fourth worst. It was like surprisingly low. I think that I'm going to keep Sace for the time being. I mean, the concern is that if he's playing in this left wing back role, does that mean that he's going to get displaced, you know, by Marçal when he Marçal, however you say his name, when he comes back, you know, Kilman played, I guess, out of position. I thought he was out of, I don't know. He played as a center back, picked up 3 bonus points, played well. It's only 4 million. So maybe Kilman is the new Sace. I don't know what's going on back there. So I'm planning to keep Sace for now, even though he has not always looked super hot. I mean, I got 2 bonus points from him. On the season, Sace has been one of my best performers. So, you know, it's just that West Ham game was just so strange, you know, and he didn't play well in the Man City match either.
Yeah, I am concerned about Wolves. I kind of built my wild card strategy around Everton and Wolverhampton, thinking, all right, well, these are solidly the two best teams without European commitments. And now I'm tripled up on Wolves, and I am like, I don't like it. I really don't. Yeah. And I think that they, like what I was saying about Raul, I think that, there are aspects of Wolves that will almost certainly come good over a certain point, but it just doesn't feel like a team you want to be over invested in.
Yeah. I mean, I think that on the Everton thing, I mean, the James Rodriguez just changes things so much because you just have a world-class chance creator on the pitch, which in theory helps the entire team. Wolves, it does feel like there's some kind of, they're a team in transition right now. And it does seem like it's hurting them in fantasy. And so maybe Sace gets dropped ultimately in my wild card. I'm not sure. I'm keeping him for now though, just because. I mean, you know, honestly, if he plays as left wing back, then that would be amazing. Like he would get a ton of chances. He'd be a great fantasy asset. It's just like, I don't know. Like, did he play that well today? I don't know. I guess he played okay. But it didn't feel like he created a ton of chances.
Yeah, I was blown away by his performance either. So yeah, just one to flag, one to watch.
All right. Well, that is that's a pod. That's all 20 teams. That was a little, very much an international break pod right there, Brandon. A little all over the place. We'll come back next week and we're going to talk about game week 5. We'll preview all the matches. We'll talk about captain picks, all that stuff. But for now, enjoy the 2 weeks off. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Brandon, do you want to thank our producer patrons?
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah. Become a producer or any patron at any tier at patreon.com/always cheating. It's a great way to say thank you for what Josh and I do every week on Always Cheating. Our producers are Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T, De Big Gaffer, Bobas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Binning, Dave Wagner Lodahl, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forberg Skoging, Paul Herzig, Kai Christine Lalang, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov, at FPL Merch, Kerry Swanson, Brandon B., Paul Scanlon, Kieran Screeton, James Hurd, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Blue Nose Stew, Producer Matt, Michael Uong, Brian Kerr, Alper Paxoy, Nicholas Verdakis, Sam Schauer, Henry Baker, and Will Husby.
Thanks, everybody. If you want to find the podcast on social media, just go to all those social media places and put in the words "always cheating." That's probably the fastest way to find us. Or just go to Google. And if you just said Twitter space always cheating, we come up very easily that way. So
I would ask Siri, Josh.
Yeah. But if you want to be part of the Harvey Milk Mustache Cup, one final reminder, open to Patreon supporters at any pledge tier, even the very lowest pledge tier. And so that kicks off in game week 5. So you have 2 weeks to join.
Okay, great. Enjoy the time off, Josh, which basically is this not really much time off for us because we'll just be back next week.
right. A little cool. Break from the stress of FBL though. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, see you, Brandon. I'll talk to you soon. See you, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.